Mela.
And I'm Hannah.
And you're listening to the Intersectional Yoginis Podcast.
Join us as we explore a variety of topics that impact us as women of color through a yogic lens.
Hope you don't mind irreverence and me cursing like a sailor.
Sprinkled in with a little satire and sass.
A little?
Well, we cover serious subjects that are important to us.
So if you're curious, keep listening.
Namaste.
Okay, hello.
Hi.
Welcome.
Welcome indeed.
All right, so on to, this is episode 4.
Is it? Or 3?
Nope, we did 3 last time.
Oh. I don't even know where we are. Okay, nice. It's kind of like a hot day here in LA. Mm-hmm. It had gotten better, but today it's kind of like, but I know it's the last day, so I'm not mad. I'm not too mad.
Yeah.
It's fine. We'll get through this.
We just had the air on for a hot minute, so.
Yeah.
Now we're good.
We need to turn it off because then it's in the recording.
Yeah. And as much as we want you to hear that, we don't. No.
We really don't. What are you talking about today, Hannah? Well,
so today I wanted to start off by explaining, last time I briefly touched on these cycles or components of grief and loss. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to kind of touch base on that. But since it was just Mental Health Awareness Day the other day.
Yes, it was.
I just wanted to dive in. You can move that.
The 10th, right?
Yeah.
October 10th.
Yeah, October 10th. So, and in the mental health field that I'm in, kind of you are in too. Really, if you think about it, because yoga deals with all of it. And the spiritual component plays a big factor.
And teaching as well.
And teaching.
Well, actually, I teach a kid in the autism spectrum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I thought that'd be important. So, the stages of grief, I have some brief notes here. So the theory comes from Kubler-Ross. And so, it's their theoretical model.
Is this a white man?
These are two white men.
Mm-hmm. What we're talking about.
Which, you know,
yeah,
it happens.
I mean, yeah, but it's good to have that information, like the perspective, right? Like, okay.
Yes.
Hold on. And when was this, I was going to say discovered, but that's not the right word.
Let's see.
Come about.
Oh, no, I thought it was two men. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Mm-hmm. Oh, good thing we checked this.
Yes.
Here I go.
Yes, Elizabeth. Oh, yes.
So, Elizabeth. So, the model is introduced by Swiss-American psychiatrist Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Mm-hmm. Okay, good to know. Let's see. 1969.
Mm-hmm. I like that number.
Mm-hmm. In her book On Death and Dying.
Okay.
So, which is why it's grief and loss.
Mm-hmm. But this can apply to any loss.
Yes.
When you lose your work, when you go, a relationship of any type, a divorce, mm-hmm. a breakup.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even loss of routine, even with the pandemic, is a loss of
life as we know it.
But yeah, whenever there's a change, or even as small, it's big to some people, but just changes, like making a decision, mm-hmm. instead of being in that, like, should I do this? Should I do this? When you make a decision and you choose, you're losing the loss of the other side of it.
Right.
So there can be grief in that.
Yeah. And even in the small, I mean, really small things like, oh, I finally finished all the seasons of Game of Thrones.
Yes.
And there's like a, you know, like, an emptiness, right?
Yeah,
that it's like, now what? What do I do now? Like, mm-hmm. it was something that was giving you joy, or that was part of your routine, or that you were looking forward to. Mm-hmm. It's no longer there.
Right. Yeah.
And it can go all the way to, I mean, losing someone, losing you, like losing your health, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Losing your job, mm-hmm. your house. What else?
Yeah. I mean,
your kids going off to college.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even little things like personality changes, or like I know for me, after I graduated undergrad and moved into grad school, I kind of moved into more of an introverted space that I was operating in. And for me, that was a big loss because I used to be like so extroverted and bubbly and doing all the things all the time and wanting to talk to people and do all this stuff. And I was confused because as I was getting older, becoming more introverted felt like now I have no connection or I don't want that. Like, what's going on? So it can even be things like that, just personality-wise. Or even, like, moving through... Well, yeah, moving.
Moving to a different country, like, to me, it was... It had to do with the personality because I feel like it took me a while to develop a new personality or translate my personality to an American personality. And not only because of the language, but, like, just everything. Like, culturally, everything's different. So it was, like, a whole transition.
Yeah.
And even, like, as a performer, I was seen so differently here. Here, I was just, like, stereotype us. Like, oh, yeah, the Hispanic one.
Yeah.
And whereas back home, I could be anyone.
Yeah.
Any character. It was more about, like, other physical traits and, like, and voice that race. That was never a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the cast there are colorblind because we only have brown people.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
All the spectrum of and all the mixes of that we have, but it was very different here where they were like assigning me roles that it's like it's not even in my range. It's not even in my voice range or my age range, and you're assigning these things to me just because I'm Hispanic. It's so stupid.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which is definitely a loss.
A loss.
For sure.
So all of those things can be a loss and start the cycle of grief.
Yeah. And what I was going to touch on too was just as we were talking about fall, you know, moving from summer to fall, like even seasonally, you can experience grief and loss as the seasons change. I mean, that's why there's literally seasonal depression. And people have those bright lights to help. Yeah. So with that, the stages of grief. So within the stages of grief, you can experience any stage at any point in time.
Don't mind if I do.
So with that, I mean, normally the stages, it starts with denial, right? So stage of denial, like this isn't happening, this isn't grief, this isn't whatever this is.
Which usually when someone, I mean, I've seen this thing happen when someone dies in the family, especially like suddenly, the first is like denial, like you, and also you get so busy in the all the little things that you have
like
to
the
do,
logistics,
like the logistics of like the funeral and all of those things, and it doesn't really
sink in
until you're back to the normal routine, and then you start like, oh yeah, there's something missing, like, here, there's someone missing here.
Yeah. So the first stage, denial. The second stage is anger, and so kind of the idea is, you know, like, why is this happening to me? This can't be happening. I mean, that's a little bit
fuck everyone,
like just pissed, like I can't believe you took this from me, or this, I can't believe this happened to me, kind of thing. Yeah, so anger. And then the third stage is bargaining. So kind of the phrase that would go with this is, I will do anything to change this. Like trying to bargain for it, trying to be like, okay, how can I...
Maybe if I...
make this better. How? Yeah, maybe if I did this, this wouldn't have been this. A lot of what ifs come into play. If I would have only, you know, said this, or I wouldn't have said that, they would still be alive, or I'd still have my job, or whatever. Then this next stage is depression. So, you know, kind of the feeling of what's the point of going on after this loss? Like, what's even the worth of it? What worth do I have?
Mm-hmm. There's no joy in anything else if I don't have this person yeah. or this thing that yeah. I lost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the last stage is acceptance, which is, it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, you can continually go through the cycle, or you can jump around in stages. I mean, it's not, mm-hmm. it is cyclical, but it doesn't have to be in that exact order. Sometimes mm-hmm. you might all of a sudden onset depression, and then it might come back to bargaining,
mm-hmm.
and then it's like complete denial, you know? Or you could be accepting at first and then something gets revealed or whatever and it kicks
mm-hmm.
you back into re-experiencing it. Or a trigger. A trigger happens. You have a friend that experiences that same loss and all of a sudden now you're feeling all of those same emotions and it's bringing up the whole grief process for you all over mm-hmm. again. You know, and then as just a society right now with the pandemic, I mean, we're all experiencing a loss.
Mm-hmm.
And so this can show up in multiple ways because there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on with, you know, Black Lives Matter. There's a lot going on with justice. What is justice? What is, well, especially in the U.S., what is the political system doing?
Mm-hmm. And I think now because of how connected we all are, it's so global. Like, I feel mm-hmm. it globally because New Zealanders are talking about it and
yeah,
like, and I follow a few accounts on Instagram and some of them are in they're all in different parts of the world and they're all talking about, for example, the election mm-hmm. or and things that are happening here because of the effect it has on everyone else mm-hmm. or every other country mm-hmm. what's happening here
mm-hmm. yeah, absolutely. So I mean, those are the stages of grief and you might experience them, you might not. They might go undercover and you won't recognize that you're like bargaining for mm-hmm. it, you know, or in a space of denial until like someone points it out to you or you're in therapy and then all of a sudden your therapist is like, oh, like this is grief and loss.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't even realize you needed that or that that's what that was. Yes. So that's kind of what I wanted to bring to the table to start out with.
Yeah. And being Mental Health Day this month,
mm-hmm.
also, we were also talking about, and also being like, there's many, I've heard different names because Indigenous Peoples Day is one name, but I've heard mm-hmm. actually in class, because the boy I shadow while he takes his classes online, he's in third grade, and his teacher was saying Indigenous Resilience Day, which I don't know. I've never heard that.
I've never heard that
one.
Either.
Uh-huh. I don't know if it's like they're doing that in like California mm-hmm. or, but it also, it ties to the decolonization of mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we also touched on about your therapist trying to decolonize
mm-hmm.
her,
mm-hmm.
her way, her method,
mm-hmm.
And also just everything around how, like the stigma, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. usually how the patriarchy or how a patriarch system puts a stigma on mental health or makes it like it's not considered okay for men to seek psychological
therapy,
help or therapy.
Yeah.
And also some specific things like, what is it, like autism is mm-hmm. one that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
How different it is or how hard it is to diagnose because everything, it can present itself very differently in men and women.
Yes.
And tests were only made for men, basically.
Yeah, to so, see... Yeah, like, so the testing subjects were male
mm-hmm.
or young boys.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what the signs that they were looking for, that then in little girls, they would just dismiss it because it's like, oh, she's just hormonal.
Hysterical. Or, the same things just, that we've
yes.
been hearing.
Or she's just dramatic
yeah,
or
yeah.
whatever the case.
So women usually get dismissed in the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as in those tests,
and they don't get diagnosed.
Right. So then they're going through life, like, obviously experiencing stuff within them that's like feeling different, not feeling mm-hmm. normal, cannot relate. Mm-hmm. And then no one is hearing a cry for help. Maybe they don't even know they're crying for help, but they're like, what's going on? You know? I found that the ratio of diagnosis is that it's 4 males to every 1 female mm-hmm. diagnosed.
So 4 times more.
Yeah, male. Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
But it's not really the incidence. It's just the diagnosis,
I think. It's just right? the diagnosis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not that it affects more men. It's just that they get diagnosed because the tests are meant to diagnose them.
What it looks like, yeah, from a male
What it looks like from a male perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then what's another one? You said the bipolar.
Oh, and then bipolar. Yeah. So it's interesting because bipolar usually shows up in women a little later, but again, it's kind of the same thing because they were originally only looking at the signs from male test subjects. And so they're diagnosing males, but also just the diagnosis in general has been happening a little bit later for bipolar, both male and female. So a lot of kids are experiencing these mood swings or mania and then depression, and they're using substances to medicate, basically, or other things that they can get their hands on to try and, you know, remedy mm-hmm. the very high highs and the very low mm-hmm. lows that they're experiencing. And that's why a lot of times, like, especially males or like teenagers or even younger, like, they are really acting out, and you'll see like high and low jumps. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so women experience typically more depressive episodes.
Okay.
And more like rapid cycling through mania and depression, whereas men kind of stay in the high mania of it more and don't have such extended long periods of depression. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's just seen as like, oh, she just has depression. We'll mm-hmm. just give her meds, mm-hmm. depression medication. Mm-hmm. She'll be fine. But really what she might need is different medication mm-hmm. or it's only helping half the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely interesting to see how the diagnosis plays a factor in really favoring, not necessarily favoring, but identifying only the factors showing up in males. Mm-hmm. Because there isn't a lot of research around what it looks like in a female.
Yeah. So. And about that, like, decolonizing just health in general is just so... in Western medicine, there's this lack of knowledge about just the relationship of mind and body, mm-hmm. Let alone spirit.
Yeah.
Or the uses of other or traditional medicines or ancestral medicines. Mm-hmm. And that also directly affects, like, mental health. Like,
yes.
Not only the systems and the society makes the perfect stage for them to develop mm-hmm. if you're not born with them or you're not genetically predisposed, but also it makes it impossible for you to identify it or making, like, be aware of them yeah. and take the first step to seek help.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, because in schools, it's very rare to find that they're even teaching, like, body awareness connected to the mind mm-hmm. or connected to emotions. You know what I mean? If it's body things, it's like PE, sports. Mm-hmm. Or the mental things, it's all like academic. Mm-hmm. But there's not much teaching. Well, I haven't been in the school system as of right now, mm-hmm. so I don't exactly know. But from when I was in it as a school counselor a couple years ago, there wasn't a lot of teaching around how your body can signal, like, what's happening for you mentally and emotionally. You know, and so if they're not teaching the kids, and if the parents aren't emotionally aware, then yeah, you just seem like you're acting crazy, mm-hmm. or you're just socially awkward, or at like the dance, you just stand by the side mm-hmm. and watch everyone dance, and you're just there, and you're like, why am I the odd one shy, out?
Or yeah. you're just introverted.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, this boy I teach, during the first week of school, they taught him mindfulness, but it was like a topic that was brought up and then never touched on ever again.
Yeah, it's like, okay, we cover that subject next.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that mindful, like doing things mindfully should be, I feel like that word you should be using with kids basically all day, all the time. Like saying like, oh, but do it with intention, or be mindful about this and that. Mm-hmm. So they start
having
integrating
awareness.
That concept mm-hmm. in their lives mm-hmm. too. And I was like, let's do the mindful. He was like, not having it. Oh. He hated the way it was like presented. So from the moment it was presented, like, I don't like it. And I'm like, okay, but there's not the only way. I mean, it's not that you don't like mindfulness. It's just that you don't like doing these things yeah. specifically, mm-hmm. or you didn't like the video, or you didn't like the boy in the video.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then I think it was the next day, he was just, I try to explain, like, you can do mindfulness by just doing things that you already do, like this and this and that. The next day, he was, I don't know, he didn't want to do, like, some work. So he's like, okay, until you want to do it, then you can come back. You can take a break, but you cannot take your iPad.
Yeah.
And then once you finish with your schoolwork, then you can use the iPad for, like, entertainment purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So he was so mad, and he wasn't talking to me. And he went to sit in the couch in the living room. And there's a big window there that you can see the backyard through it. And there are trees and bushes mm-hmm. and, like, a huge wall of like, bushes. Like, to cover the whole property.
Beautiful.
And he was just, like, staring at it for, like, so long. And I just saw him, and I was like,
yes.
You're practicing mindfulness.
You're doing it.
But then, like, I didn't say anything. And then right. afterwards, I was like, hey, do you know that when you were doing that, that's, like, practicing mindfulness? He was just like, no, I was just looking at the trees out the window. And I was like, oh, and what else were you looking at? And I'm like, well, the birds and the butterflies, and sometimes, like, how the wind would, like, move the trees. I'm like, that's mindfulness.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because you were focusing on the present moment, on one thing, on what was happening now, and you were not thinking about you being mad at me or school or mm-hmm. any other stuff. You were literally giving your brain a break. And did you enjoy doing that?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, I do it all the time. I mean, sometimes. And I'm like, well, then there it is.
There you go.
You do practice mindfulness.
You're like, yes.
I was like.
Yes. That's right.
Yeah.
Child. Yes.
So I do try to bring it up every now and then, but I feel like he developed this, like, from the moment he didn't like the video or whatever
sure.
it was presented, mm-hmm. like, he was just like, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, we still do it. I just don't, sometimes I just don't call it mindfulness
yeah.
because now he has this aversion towards the word. So I'm just like, okay, let's go outside and be in the hammock and see if the birds come to the feeders.
Yeah. Yeah, just watch.
Yeah, let's just watch.
Listen.
Let's,
like,
just listen.
What do you see? What do you hear? What do you smell? Like,
mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yes. But I mean, what a good way to help regulate the mental health. You know what I mean? And with that, like, bringing in a meditation technique. You know, some people are like, I can't meditate, or it's hard for me, or whatever. Like, they say, I don't have the time. It's like, no, everything you do can be a meditation if you just set intention to it. I mean, you can walk from here to the bathroom. You can eat a piece of pizza. You can brush your teeth in a meditative way.
Yeah, if you do it by being present
right.
while you do it,
mm-hmm.
it's mindfulness.
Exactly.
If you're being
yeah.
mindful,
If you're being mindful,
you're practicing mindfulness.
You're doing it.
You're doing it.
It's not that hard. Literally, yeah. Just listening to this, and maybe just listening to
even
this
driving.
Itself. Yeah.
Sometimes it's just like you can get like not in the present moment and just listen to a podcast mm-hmm. or music or whatever it is. You're mm-hmm. cussing at people, whatever it is, instead of really being like mindful of what you're doing. Like, what am I feeling? What am I seeing? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because all of a sudden you can just show up and you're like, oh, how did I get here?
Yeah, you disconnect. And there's
all the
this,
time.
Yeah. It even has a name that, because when I studied for my driver's license for the DMV, there's even like, it has a name where you kind of like space out and you go into like some like autopilot stuff in your brain, because you just like go somewhere in your mind where you're thinking about whatever you have to do tomorrow, especially in the highway that is like just the straight, same for like, yeah. But in the freeway, it can happen too. And there's a name for it. And it's very interesting because it's not being present.
Yeah. Which happens
every day.
So much.
Happens to me every day.
Yes.
Like, you know what happens to me a lot? Actually, Elena was, she told me this. But I started doing this thing where I was teaching and I didn't want to be like interrupt the class or make it seem like I was looking like at my phone or something. Mm-hmm. So whenever there was a student, I would just like look at my phone to check the time and to see like when we needed to cut or end or whatever. And then I would just look at the time and put the phone back and then not register what time it was.
Yeah.
So I would need to do it again. And then it looked rude because then it looked like I was like,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I told Elena that. Elena is one of my students and a client, too. And she said, it's like, Mama, you're not present. You need to be present. I'm like, you're right.
You're like, oh, oops.
Yeah, sure. I'm not being present. I'm just thinking about, oh, I hope the student doesn't think this is rude because blah 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 blah, like all these things, like ideas that when they're probably like not even noticing, like they're like looking at their book or like whatever. And then I was like, yes, it's present. It's mm-hmm. not being present.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like I know I need to look, but you're not consciously saying, oh, let me look, what time is it? Oh, 4:01. Okay, we have 10 more minutes. Mm-hmm. Like that wasn't happening.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, what are all the other thoughts racing in? And then, like, judgments or perceptions or expectations, like, all of that just, like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, present moment is powerful because, I mean, if you think about anxiety, that's, like, worrying about the future.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much anxiety collectively.
Yes.
And just, like,
you can feel the cortisol in the air.
Yeah, right? Yes, but seriously, and it's you know, just that forward thinking and then worrying.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, one of the practices that really helps with anxiety is, again, anything that will get you into the present moment mm-hmm. and into the body. Like, what is happening right now? Physically, mentally, mm-hmm. emotionally.
Yeah, how am I feeling? How am I breathing? What am I feeling?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like tapping into all the senses, you know, just connecting into that, because the second the mind goes, oh, but what if, and then this, and then this, and then this, it's like, whew, like the brain doesn't register like, oh, we can do that later, or compartmentalize. Like on some level, that's activating the fight or flight
mm-hmm.
system. And it's like, okay, now we're juiced. Now we're ready. Mm-hmm. Now here's like adrenaline along with anxiety and then all this stuff. And then after you're at some point, you're depleted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because chronic stress and chronic anxiety like that then causes so much in the body, like literally disease.
Yeah. Chemically. Dis-ease. Like, yeah.
Like we talked about last time.
Yeah.
You know, like just stress in general causing inflammation and then causing mm-hmm. physical ailments mm-hmm. to your body. And it's like people go in and wonder, oh, I have this ache or pain, I don't know what it's from. It's like not only looking at it from a physical stand, like what have you been doing physically, But it's like, how is your mental mindset? How is your emotional space?
And also socially, because that part is so sometimes like so disregarded about the concept of health. If your environment, if where you live, or if your society, like right now, like if racism is so prevalent, how can you, as a person of color, or especially a black person, can go about your life without having anxiety?
Right.
It's
just there.
Injustice causes physical disease by that. By following those steps.
Yeah. So it's like, okay.
It's all linked. It's all...
all linked.
It's all the same.
Yes. And I mean, too, especially kids right now, like, doing online school and not having the social interaction that they would normally have, like, being in the school with other kids. Like, that's also starting to cause a lot of disease. but I just know from my personal experience working with some students, like, they're having trouble really... like having an outlet of like play and fun and joy. Like they're just like studious, whatever. And then go eat, go do whatever. And then
5 minutes, come back, sit again.
Yeah. Like maybe go take a 10-minute break, go outside for a little bit. But at some point that social aspect is necessary to continue to develop, continue to develop with each other. So I'll be curious to see, you know, on the other end of things,
yeah,
if school continues to be online or if they integrate back in, how that will play. But you know, it'd be interesting to see the ramifications mentally of everything shutting down.
Yeah. I mean, and not, yeah, it just things changing, because it's also like not everything shutting down, but it felt like that for a bit, and then you start finding, okay, so what now? If this is not the way, then what's the new way now? And you start finding those new ways, and then you're like, I feel like it's been a while since I've felt normal. Like sometimes I just forget about the pandemic.
Yeah.
Because like how I've curated my life and like my interactions and my routine now is like, oh, I sometimes just like forget, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I need to like go to the grocery store or like do this and like mask, and only in those moments I remember, but usually
everything else is operating
everything else
accordingly.
Is
accordingly.
Yeah except for the fact that now I do a lot more online, which it was something that I was that I wanted, that I've been wanting for a long time, to avoid the commute, the LA commute, yo, because it's not fun.
It's not.
That's actually very stressful, too.
That does.
Yeah, it definitely is a factor to take into consideration when taking a job.
Yeah.
But it's like, it links back to the same thing. It's like, okay, is it worth it? Like, it's always like, okay, what's going to stress me more? Not having money or having to go
to
through
drive
traffic
for
in
3 hours.
Yeah.
Of just driving, sitting there with people who are disconnected from the driving.
Yeah.
So they're all over the place thinking about whatever. And then you're like, eep, honk, honk, like all these things.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, you really do have to weigh the pros and cons. And I think engaging with that mental health side to bring awareness to like, oh yeah, how is this going to affect me? Which is just as important as, well, I view as like financial, as like the finances, or, you know, physically, is it going to be taxing? But mentally, is it going to be taxing? Emotionally, is it going to be taxing?
Spiritually, when you're doing something that you really don't like you're or something you're against, and you're participating in an industry or some sort of dynamic that doesn't align with your views or philosophy.
Yeah, your morals, your values, your... Yeah.
Yeah. It takes a toll.
Yeah, absolutely. To where the point where people get burnt out or they get pushed to an edge that then they have to make dramatic changes. I know this personally.
That's capitalism right there. That's just a consequence of which again, stems from colonialism. Like, colonialism, it's all the same. Yeah. Like, and I was actually looking for things that are like, okay, but what are, okay, I know kind of like the impact that colonialism, like, and colonization had in us. But mm-hmm. now, what can you do to start deprogramming or like reverting mm-hmm. that? Mm-hmm. And then I found a few steps that you can start with, and that they're also linked to mental health, because all of these things, it's like, yeah, you'll be happier if you do this, like, all of these. And one of them, I have actually the list right here, but I believe the first one was going within, like, you're looking within and really acknowledging that you have a relationship with yourself. And then, so sitting with yourself, accepting the situation as it is, and without any judgment, just like, okay, what's happening with me? How do I treat myself? How do I talk to myself?
Which is such a practice, because we're not trained to not judge. Like, all social media, all these things, like, media in general, putting women's standards and men's standards up against each other, it's like, that's a practice in itself, is just like, how do I come into a space of non-judgment?
And I feel like, especially ourselves, because I've heard all these comments, I hear all these comments about, like, for example, from, like, Anna, my friend, that she's always like, I'm fat, I'm horrible, I'm this, I'm that. I'm like, excuse me? Would you say that to me?
Yeah.
Like, I'm way fatter than you. Like, would you say that to me? No, because you're beautiful. I'm like, why do you say that to yourself?
Yeah.
Like, first of all, it's like fat phobia, and it's like, it's telling. Like, okay.
Yeah.
And then second of all, if you wouldn't say that to your best friend or your sister or your mom or any other person, why would you say that to yourself?
Yeah.
That's, so one of the things is that, like, the relationship with yourself. The other one is the relationship to the land and all the things, all the living things. So acknowledging that you are part of a bigger system and that...
The ecosystem,
Ecosystem. And that whatever you do to yourself affects others, and whatever you do to others affects you. So that's like kind of like rooting the exercise we were we the exercise you told me to do, like
bury your feet in the sand.
But it's like kind of like claiming your place in the universe and in the land, like asking for permission, but then rooting yourself and like really believing that you belong where you are. And another one is taking intentional time to be in an accountable, honest relationship with others. So it's like, okay, I need people, but not people that are going to tell me what I want to hear, right?
Right.
Like, but healthy relationships that are going to maybe confront you or hold you accountable for your actions. And then the other one that was very interesting that goes back to what you were saying about, like, the self-image and all of these things with capitalism is that everything is telling you that you're not enough, that you need things or that you need external stuff to be happy, whether it's literally things or things to change yourself, to change your body or to change your life or to change how you look, or it's all about, like, the external shell of the things. So going back to the I am enough, and I have unique qualities, and I have a purpose. My going back to that, connecting with your true self, and like basically like embracing your what makes you unique,
right? Not this like perfectionist like tendency, which is a program. Like perfectionism is a program that we've learned.
Yeah. So it's one affirmation is I am light and give myself permission to walk in my light, for example, or I am enough. I see the light in others and speak and act from that place. And another one that I found really interesting, which is within the same I am enough one, is I will not spread ideas of emptiness and need, but abundance and creativity. Mm. So, and again, with the social justice fight and the activism, it's like always flipping it and turning it into not only about what we're against, mm-hmm. but remembering what we're for.
Yeah, which is like in therapy, reframing is like a technique. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so whatever's bad, like, how can you reframe that to see a different perspective, mm-hmm. or to see the positive light within this shadow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a really really interesting thread that I read, a Twitter thread that I saw on Instagram from Marie Bitchum. She's an anti-racist educator and environmentalist, I believe. Hope I'm not messing it up.
I messed up the whole grief process. Who knew it was Elizabeth? But with two last names.
But I mean, I know. I'm glad we like, found that. Like, yeah. We found that out, because it's good to know like where are these theories coming from. There was a whole thread about exactly about that, about like, what was the term?
Reframing.
Mm-hmm. That was mm-hmm. it. And then the last one is just ask yourself, who holds me accountable for my actions and who am I accountable to? Mm-hmm. So it goes about both ways. Yeah. Not only are you surrounding yourself with people that are going to hold you accountable, but also you do that for them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's not the same people, but it's like a circle or a line or a net.
Yes, or even like thinking about plants, like just having house plants, like just out here, you just watered the plants, mm-hmm. right? It's like you're accountable, like, okay, if you've purchased the plant, now this is your responsibility. Like, it'll tell you by its leaves or whatever it has, like, I need something, and you're accountable to keep that plant alive. Mm-hmm. And then in return, like, that plant gives you life, gives you oxygen, cleanses the air, some of them, you know what I mean? It
gives you joy. I mean, I feel joy when looking at
them. Yes, you talk to them, they're your friend. I name them. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's accountability not only with people, but also with your environment, what's around you.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, that social element is a very important part of mental health, because at the end, it's all connected. If you, let's say, get diagnosed with, how do you call those? You never know my words, but like a chronic disease, sure, which affects your body. Mm-hmm. That's gonna have an impact on your mental health.
Oh yes, absolutely.
You're gonna go through a process of grief, mm-hmm. because your life is not gonna be the same, mm-hmm. and there's probably a few things that you won't be able to enjoy or do anymore, mm-hmm. or eat. 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 What's eat?
Eat. Hungry. Eat.
Let me eat something. And again, if your social environment changes, like with COVID, mm-hmm. it can take a toll on your mental health too. Absolutely. Like, it's all connected. Mm-hmm. Or if you have a mental health
diagnosis.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It can take a toll on your physical too. Yes. Like, what if you, or because of the medication, you start like eating a lot or losing weight, mm-hmm. or feeling like physically you can feel the mental health
the side effects or the illness,
whatever. Sometimes, like, when you're in deep states of depression, you literally feel the pain in your body.
Yes, absolutely. Sometimes you can't get out of bed,
you can't move. So the conclusion is, it's all connected. The bad things come from colonization.
Darn you, colonization! I like that, indigenous resiliency.
Right? I like that,
which
too.
Also, like, resiliency is such a huge factor in how you're going to move through or with mental illness or through your mental health. Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a strength. But resiliency will show people, or like show in statistics. I mean, I don't have the statistics with me, mm-hmm. but people
Let's
with
ask
more,
Elizabeth.
Right, Elizabeth, help me out. Girl, are you still around or what?
Or are you stuck in 69?
I need 69. A line. What is that thing where it's like, phone a friend? But it's like the people who have better resiliency skills are the ones who are going to live longer or get through the diagnosis better, mm-hmm. or, you know, have
flip it and reverse joy. It.
Yeah.
That's Missy Elliott, but I like her philosophy. You know, like when something happens, absolutely. Flip it and reverse it. What you said.
Yeah.
The, what was it?
Reframing.
Yeah. That's the flip it and reverse it. Missy Elliott taught me that.
She already knew. She was teaching people before they knew, too. Yeah. That's the thing. And that's the beauty of it, too. It's like getting creative with the arts, like getting physical movement. Like, there's so many ways to help with your mental health, mm-hmm. which is just as important as your physical health, which is just as important as emotional health, is just as important as spiritual health.
Yeah, they're all as important. There will be occasions in which one is
presenting
itself more, but that can only sometimes means that
something is off
something
balance.
Else is off balance. Yeah. Or like if sometimes a physical thing is like, okay, so what's wrong spiritually or what's wrong mm-hmm. mentally or what's wrong emotionally that made this physical thing present itself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be merely physical, like genetics.
Yeah.
But I feel like most of the time,
there's usually an emotional component.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I've been learning with neuro-emotional technique, NET, mm-hmm. is this technique I've been using and learning about where the body... So whenever like a stressor or a trauma has happened, sometimes the body will take on that emotion so that the mind
doesn't have to deal with it.
Yeah, because the mind cannot deal with it at that moment. Mm-hmm. So it stores it in the body, saves it for later to when you can actually process and deal with it.
That's why in yoga I hear so much like, oh, you have so many emotions like stuck in your hips.
In your hips, yes. Yeah, because we store the emotions in mm-hmm. our hips because, I mean, they're nice and juicy.
Lots of emotions right here.
Right? But yeah, so the muscle tissues, all the tissues and sometimes the organs in the body are taking on these stressors because the mind is not able to deal with it at that point. Mm-hmm. And intuitively, it knows, right? So with neuroemotional technique, you can go in and you can touch a body point or if you have a pain or something and you can use muscle testing to basically ask the body, hey, is there an emotion tied to mm-hmm. this pain? And if there is, the muscle test will tell you. It's so cool. I'm like, what? My body talks to me and I don't even have to talk for it? Like, it will just say. Mm-hmm. Basically, if there's some emotional component, the muscle will fail. If there's not, the muscle holds strong. Mm-hmm. And then it's purely physical. Mm-hmm. But if there's an emotional component, then you can go in and you can not only clear that emotion that's stored in the body right there, but you can ask the body, when was the original event, at what age?
And go back to it
and go back to the original event and clear it from there so mm-hmm. that it doesn't keep showing up mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's an age where you're really young. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's in the womb. Sometimes it's at conception. Like there's, it can go far back and the body will tell you, which is so cool. But it's like, yes, everything is tied together. So then you use your own body, like as a practitioner, like I'm not doing anything to you. Mm-hmm. I'm just simply using the meridian lines to help navigate the emotions, but you clear it yourself. And then at the end of it, you retest the exact same spot and the muscle test will tell you if you cleared it mm-hmm. and it'll hold strong. And it's like, what? Amazing.
What?
This is magic. No, it's not magic.
It should be the cover of a YouTube video.
I like it. But no, I just think it's so cool how there's multiple modalities to address mental health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health.
Like social health.
Social health. Yeah, like all of these things. And so it's like if something's not working for you, there are other things you can try. It's not just, this doesn't work, so I give up, so I'm doomed forever. Or I'm going to stay in this muck and be like the Grinch, right?
Yeah, I'm a lot like that. Like or I was. Sometimes. I mean, yeah, I struggle with that. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that was very, very interesting, Hannah.
Well, thank you.
everything you talked about today. Yeah,
I learned too. So, you know, I'm going back to grad school, so I'm going to learn more because obviously I don't even know my own theorists. So.
You don't know Elizabeth? What?
Elizabeth, please. Ay, ay, ay. But I'll learn. I keep learning, and that's the humility of it. It's just like, well, okay, I was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually the purpose of, like, doing this and doing, like, the spiritivism account, too, is, like, because I want to learn about it. Yeah. I don't know shit. Like,
I don't know all the things. It's like, I don't know. I think I know things.
Yeah, I know things, but I don't know. I'm not an expert in anything. But I think that's my, what's the word?
Prerogative? I don't know. But I was going to say. Joking.
That's like the beauty of me. Like, yeah. I know a little bit of a lot of things instead of being an expert. And that's another thing that capitalism looks down upon, you know? Like, you need to be a subspecialist in, like, one thing. Where, one area. No, you don't. You don't have to anything, first of all.
No. Well-rounded is what's going to create more connection with different people. It's going to expose people to different things, and then you build and learn off of it from each other.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And, like, that's what we're doing now. Like, we're Googling, and we're talking on Instagram, and we're like,
calling Elizabeth,
and we're saying, hey, lady, what's up? Thank you for this theory.
I love this year, 1969. What up, yo? Take me back to 1969. Yes.
It was more like this. I don't know it.
The sunshine.
Yes, I don't know the rest of the lyrics.
Okay, yeah. Listen to Hair, the original cast recording. But yeah, good talk, Hannah.
Good talk.
We'll go back to our lives now. But okay. I hope you guys enjoyed our chat today.
Yes. Hopefully, you learned a little something or something. You know, sparked, and you're curious now, and want to look into some things, so.
And you start taking care of your mental health.
Yes, please do.
Because if you don't, please do.
It's important.
For everyone. Not just you.
Not just you, but especially for you.
Especially for you. Yeah.
And all of us.
Okay, guys. That is it for today. Hope to have your ears soon.
Yes. Thank you for listening to the Intersectional Yoginis
podcast. I am Mela, and you can find me at Yes Mela Lopez and Spiritivism on Instagram.
And I'm Hannah Rodriguez, and you can find me on Doing Yoga with Hannah
on Instagram.
Oh yes, on Instagram.
Yeah. Okay, see you there.
Hasta.
Bye. Hasta.
's for listening to the Intersectional Yoginis podcast.
If you liked this episode, please rate and share. If you didn't like it,
please don't go rating.
You can find us on Instagram at
the Intersectional Yoginis.
Namaste.
Namaste.